In the paper, you'll see I discuss what's some of the things that you'll think about when you're looking at the right-of-way as when you're just being part of the city staff. And you're going to look at the access of the residents to major streets and highways, but you also want to consider, when you're considering that kind of access, is whether or not you want them to be able to get to the streets and highways. You don't want to inadvertently create a shortcut, for example. So there's both access and sometimes non-access. School zones, the size of streets, placement of traffic control devices, the requirements for the widening in the streets, or maybe you want to not have a lot of widening. I had a city when I was practicing that was a dark sky city, and they didn't want a lot of widening. Drainage, your water and wastewater facilities, and then, like I said before, your other utilities. All those need to be considered. But for legal considerations, what you're going to be looking at is your city ordinances and policies, state law, and federal law. So the city regulations are usually going to be found in the subdivision ordinance, and a lot of times that'll have a lot of different specifications in it, and the paper discusses some of those a little bit more. Your right-of-way ordinance, which is a right-of-way management ordinance, and how many of you are with cities? Are most of you here representing cities? Do you all have right-of-way management ordinances? You should. You need to have one. The street standards, open space, your median requirements, right-of-way dedication, make sure that you actually own the right-of-way before you start putting stuff in it. The bonds for construction and maintenance. In the paper I mentioned, I was talking to Dottie ahead of time a little bit about maintenance bonds. And where I live, I had a little problem with the street in front of my house. We just moved there a few years ago, and the street started collecting a little bit of water. And so I called the city to see if there was anything that could be done about it. And they came out, they fixed it. They kind of had something, they just pumped it up. I guess they stuck in there and kind of pumped it up. But while the workers were talking to me, since I'm interested in this stuff, I said something about that this was such a new street that I was, I hoped that they were going to be using the maintenance bond and give them that money back. And they said, no, the maintenance bond's already over. And I was like, it's not even developed yet. All the houses aren't even out yet. So you might want to consider how you have those maintenance bonds run. I suggested maybe, even though 2 years is standard, you might want to consider a longer period. Dottie suggested to me that you might not want to have the maintenance bonds start until, it might not want to accept them until some of that work is done. So anyway, you want to look at that because you don't want to be in the position the city I lived in was in where they were just paying for that themselves. And finally, city franchises, licenses, and use agreements are going to affect your right-of-way uses. The state laws governing right-of-way use, generally speaking, are going to be Texas Local Government Code Chapter 283 and 284, Utilities Code 66, Chapters 54 and 181. Chapter 283 was passed in 1999, and it was one of the first laws that was passed that began to seriously erode cities' franchising ability and control of the right-of-way. It allowed telecom wireline providers to be in the right-of-way as a matter of right through state statute. They don't have to come get franchises anymore. And a lot of you, depending on how long you've been practicing, you may never have even done a telecom franchise. It was used to be a big deal, but that's completely something that doesn't happen anymore. It provides for compensation through access line charges. It provided the initial method for establishing those charges as well as the cost of living adjustment factor in those. It allowed cities to pass right-of-way management ordinances, and it gave the PUC a major role in interpreting and oversight for that process. And it was after this statute that we first started seeing a lot of right-of-way management ordinances really come into being as codified ordinances. Prior to that, since everybody had to get a franchise or a license to be in your right-of-way, a lot of right-of-way management stuff was dealt with through the franchise or license. But once people didn't need one anymore, AT&T, Verizon, they could just get into the right-of-way. If you were going to tell them, no, you have to be, erosion control, you have to have lane closure, certain types, if you're going to do that, you have to do all these different things, they'd say, well, where's that written? And so you needed to have that dealt with ahead of time so you could say, well, right there in Chapter 18 of the ordinances. So in 1999, 2000, a lot of these right-of-way ordinances were initially written. I say that because in the next one, a lot of them got rewritten. So I just wanted to mention, though, I mentioned the access line fees, and I'm not really here to talk about compensation, fair and just compensation for use of the right-of-way, which I strongly believe in, but it's not my topic. But I will say that the compensation we get from Chapter 283 and Chapter 66 of the Utilities Code, there is legislation pending that will affect that compensation, just to be aware of that. Senate Bill 1152, that actually decreased your compensation quite a bit if it passes. Texas Local Government Code Chapter 284 was passed in 2017, and that allowed small cells to be in the right-of-way as of right. And I guess they thought that the writers of it, which I believe to be the companies, thought that was really clever to put it right next to 283. It was interesting to me that they must not have been that much happier with the PUC than we were as cities, because the PUC has no oversight role in Chapter 284 at all. Chapter 284, like I said, it allows the small cells to be not just in the right-of-way, but they can actually attach to city facilities. So potentially your traffic signals, if you own the street lights, if you're a municipally owned utility, there's a whole part of that they can attach to that, to all kinds of things without getting a franchise. Now, if they do attach actually to your facilities, they still are supposed to get an agreement with you about that.